This is Report to Wyoming.
I'm Colby Theodore, and in this podcast episode, I have a lovely conversation with Casper resident Leslie Colburn. Many of you have seen her at the Cottage Cafe. She and her husband own and operate the cafe. She's also a writer, a mother, and so much more. She recently published a book called Twinkle, the Littlest Star. We recorded this on Tuesday, November 12th, which was also the release date for the book. She had an open house at the Cottage Cafe from 4 to 7 p.m. where families gathered to enjoy the reading of the book and participated in festive activities. This was, like I said, a lovely chat, and I so enjoyed getting to know Miss Leslie Colburn a little bit better. You live here in Casper?
I do, yeah. I live here in Casper.
I think we should tell listeners, too, where you work, because I just learned this, folks, and it makes a lot of sense. So,
I work at the Cottage Cafe. We've had it for, well, my husband's had it for 30 years, and we've been married over 20. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, Cottage Cafe.
How did he get this little cottage? It's a beautiful, it's like almost Victorian style.
Exactly. He just was new to Casper and was looking for a job, and he asked himself what he wanted to do, and he decided he wanted to own a restaurant. So he just started looking around, and this place was for sale, and he just, and it, you know, it already had a lot of the components that a restaurant needs. Like the dish room was already an added on thing. It wasn't actually a dish room, but it was easy to convert into one. So he just did it.
Had it been a restaurant before?
No, it was never a restaurant. I think it was an art gallery before. And then I actually just got a message from somebody whose grandparents used to live there. And now they live in Colorado. But it was just another piece of the story, which I was so amazed by. Yeah.
And then did your husband have any restaurant experience?
So he is the youngest of eight. And his mom was a genius. I think by the time he came along, she'd cook so many meals. One time he made her a scrambled egg, and she praised him. And the rest is for history. I mean, they do have so many wonderful cooks in their family. I think it is a gift, but his mom, I think, was part of that too.
Okay, so you're often front of house. I just assumed you were doing most of the cooking and orchestrating all the recipes and everything that has to be done. Is he still a pretty pivotal piece of this?
So I like to say that the reason we've been in business for as long as we have is because he cooks and I don't.
I can relate to that.
No, it's a good thing I don't cook there, and actually my kids request that I don't, and that's okay with me. I'm fine with that.
Do you guys eat there quite a bit?
We do. I mean, we do, just because like my daughter works there, and so we do try to sit down after shift and eat.
I love that. Yeah. My husband is the general manager at Jay's Pub, and we eat a lot of Jay's Pub. Uh-huh. And it's free food, so.
And it's so it's good.
Great. It's good. It's bad. And I don't cook very well. I have five recipes, and those are the things that I cook on my husband's days off. Otherwise, it's just kind of like a not fancy charcuterie for me and the girls, because they're 3 and 6.
Perfect.
So I'm cutting up cheese sticks and putting salami out, and it works. They're eating. We get some vegetables and fruit in there, but otherwise, I don't cook very much. So
I think you have about one or two recipes more than I do then.
No, that soup, though, like I said, I will be coming in for lots of soup. And you guys are only, you got to get in there. I think it's from 12 to 2, right?
11 to 1:30.
11 to 1:30.
Yes.
It's a narrow window, it and is. You get quite a rush. And so the more people find out about it, too, the crazier and busier it gets, which I didn't find out about it until I'd been here for over a year. So now I'm one of those people in line, but I'm excited.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad.
Are you open in the summer too?
Yes. Yep, we're open in the summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And Tom makes all of the soups and breads and muffins and like everything. And so that's kind of why we keep it small window that we're open, because he is there 6 a.m. to try to get all that stuff ready.
Oh, sure. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's exclusive. I love the spread that you put on the muffins.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes, like last year, I was like, I can't have I want them, but I'm not eating those. You're like, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Don't twist my arm. But anyways, you're here today to talk about your book. Is this your first book that you've published?
This is actually my sixth book.
Sixth. Okay. Are all of these children's books?
They are all children's books. Yep. They're all faith-based children's books that have a message that you're created on purpose or that in your masterpiece or an answer to prayer. Yeah.
Let's go to the first book. What was the title of this one?
That one was called The Regift. And that was the first book. I wrote it in 2010. And my daughters were 3 and 6 at the time.
Aww.
And they illustrated it.
Oh, wow. So this started out as a lofty goal, I imagine. How did you get the idea that you were going to be an author? Is it something that you'd always wanted to do, or was it impulsive?
Well, I entered a young authors contest in third grade. My teacher kind of required us to do that. And then I won some sort of an award. And that's the first memory that I have of writing and like having like, oh, I maybe have something to say. And then it wasn't until I had my daughters that I wanted to send, I wrote them love letters. I actually lost my mom when my oldest daughter was 1. And so I was just trying to find a way to bridge this memory of my mom to a gift to my girls. And so I started writing them love letters on Mother's Day. And now these books these letters have kind of come to be books.
And so they illustrated.
Yes.
And what's the process like when you set out to write a book and get it published ideally?
Well, there's multiple ways to do that. I have chosen to self-publish. And so the way that looks is I hire an illustrator and I hire an editor and I hire the book designer. And so the books come to me and then I get to distribute them. So it is a long process with many members of the team, which is so nice. And because everybody brings something to the table, a level of expertise. And so it just creates a book that is the best that it can be. And I'm just, you know, I write the words and the story, but there are so many pieces to really get it to be this complete package.
Okay. And then the next, before we get to book 6, those next 4 books, did those come kind of sporadically, or do you set a goal like I'm going to do 1 every 2 years or whatever it is?
I don't know that I've set goals, but the way that it's worked out since my first book is I wrote my second book in 2020. So there was a big gap there and a lot of things, you know, mostly because my girls were so little and it's time consuming. So in 2020, I wrote my second book and then it's been 1 book every year since then. I think that it really does take that amount of time to give each book its just the time that it and the potential for to reach its full potential. But honestly, I think the biggest for a picture book, which is what I write, it's the illustrations take a long time and to get them, you know, the way that we want them to be.
Now, do your children illustrate all of the books, or have you had to hire? Or do you do it?
Nope. I don't illustrate. Again, it's like cooking. Like, I stay in my lane.
You stay in your lane. Yeah, I so relate to that.
Yeah, my girls don't, they don't illustrate them now. I do have my next book in the works that one of my daughters is doing the sketches right now. So that is something that will hopefully be in the future.
Mm-hmm. How do you find your artists?
So the editor and the book designer that I have right now, they have a pool of illustrators that they pull from, and they just kind of see which illustrators are available and which illustrators' style matches the author or the writer's vision for the book.
I like this collaboration. Do you?
Oh, so important.
I'm kind of a control freak. How much control do you have over the style of the art? Are you, or is it kind of a surprise? Like, oh yeah, that works. That looks great.
Well, with the one who did this new book, Twinkle the Littlest Star, he has done, I'm going to say, over 100 books. And he is a professional. He brought me the layouts and the sketches. And we had one meeting where we just talked about the different, there was only a couple tweaks that I was like, because originally he had almost all the girl characters. And I was like, oh, I want a couple boys in there. So really, I mean, he brought so it's when you have an illustrator who knows what they're doing and who is a professional, they bring another story to the manuscript. So the words are one story, but the illustrations create this whole different story inside of it. And he really just knew what he was doing.
Oh, I love that. Because every night at our house, we try to do three books before bed. It's hard finding books that both of the girls will enjoy because I've got the older one and the younger one. And so having captivating pictures is really good. But also we're working on that literacy piece and developing reading skills. So even though I'll read, I'll point to a word. Do you want to read this page? And trying to, I think they're both important. So trying to have both of those things is what makes a book really special.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you have the different ages of your children. They're both at different stages in their reading abilities and literacy. And so, yeah, I love that.
Is there a specific target, an audience that you're trying to reach?
My books are pretty much for 4 to 7-year-olds. They are faith-based. And so, you know, I really think that my books, that I write them because I'm a mom and I know how and you're a mom and we know how important that time is with our children. And so my audience are families so that they can create time and memory together. Yeah.
And it does open a conversation.
Absolutely.
It's amazing to see what kids absorb when you read books to them, even if it's about, you know, whatever we're going through. Last year, it was potty training with the youngest.
Okay.
We'd read books about potty training, and they do internalize it. Not, you might not notice it right away, but if there's like a potty song or something in the book, then they're singing it later, and it's great.
Yeah, and one thing I've learned is if our children can see themselves in the character, then they connect with that, and whatever the message of the book is, it is more valuable. So that's one of the goals that we have when we write books, is for our audience to see themselves in that character.
Now, you said faith-based. Does your audience have to belong to a certain religion to appreciate what it says or to relate to it?
No, I think that the message is universal. You are loved. You matter. You were created on purpose. Yeah.
So with kids, and of course it's important, but can you articulate why maybe that's significant?
Oh, gosh. I think, I mean, I have, my girls are older now. My youngest is 17. But in a day and age where, especially with social media, there's that comparison and wanting to be so much like somebody else. And I think that it's really important that we all know that we are okay as we are. We are a one-of-a-kind masterpiece. And if we can just feel that and know that and walk in this world with that confidence, there's so much value in that. We don't need to compare ourselves to anybody else. We just need to be our best version of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Self-acceptance.
Yes.
And that is, I don't know if it's always been like that, but I can speak to today. It's difficult even for me sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we live in a society that presents us with unrealistic images.
Yes.
Constantly. And now it's like, gosh, this one store I shop at, I just found out they're using all AI models.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is pernicious because I'm buying the sweater. But I also am like, why don't I have hair like that? And, you know, and so it's funny, too. And it makes me think, I get a little off topic. Sorry with the rambling. But even when I'm laying down to read those books, sometimes those messages will hit me at the end of the day and I'm tearing up.
And I actually, with this new book, I've seen that with adults, and it's, you know, we all have that child inside of us, and the message of these books can pertain to all people, all ages. I hope that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. I love that. And making that time, like you said, where everybody gets together. In our house, we kind of like snuggle up or we lay on the floor, but it is really special. And we never have enough books. So we're constantly trading them out. We've got our ones that we will keep forever. But it's amazing when you read three books a night, how fast you go through them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I'm sure your girls have their favorites. And then there's ones that you've read that you're like, oh, please don't pick that one again.
The Giving Tree is one that we've read a million times, and it always makes me cry.
I love that one. That is one of my favorites, too.
It's a good one. And Dr. Seuss books.
Of course.
I'm kind of partial to those. So I keep all of my Dr. Seuss books. And I have books from when I was little that my mom gave me.
Oh, good.
Do you have books when you were little that you still remember that maybe inspired you?
I love Stregonona by Tommy DePaulo.
Oh, yes.
I love that one. That's probably my all-time favorite one. But Dr. Seuss, The Giving Tree, I love Shel Silverstein.
Mm-hmm.
His I write in verse, and so he's been a big influence for me as a writer, too. Yeah.
Okay. Do your girls like to write, too?
Not at this point. I mean, they're still in school, so any writing that they do is probably mostly a requirement and an assignment. So I haven't seen that in them yet, but they are creative in their own ways, yeah.
I ask because, yeah, everything I do, it seems like the kids want to copy.
Oh, that's good.
So it's a good way. It's like that I'll tell them things, and it just goes in one ear and out the other. But when I'm doing my yoga in the morning, I get annoyed because they want to do their yoga too. But then I realize, like, well, they're learning. They just want to do what I'm doing. So that's a good thing. But it makes me a little more self-conscious about what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, aware of what you're doing because they do. They're just little sponges, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did you start writing? For fun, I should say, because we all are writers in school.
Well, I wrote when I was in third grade, the Young Authors Contest, but really it wasn't until I was an adult. I don't remember writing very much in junior high or high school or even college unless it was for an assignment. You know, really, I didn't really even journal. So not until I felt like I had something to say. And that was when my girls were little, and I just wanted them to know how loved they were. And yeah, that's really when I started writing again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's so interesting. What does your process look like?
I write on a laptop. I know a lot of people like the pen and paper, and I just am a laptop writer. I think something will inspire me. So for this last book, it was a podcast that I listened to. I listened to the podcast in 2021. Which was almost 4 years ago, and it was a podcast about finding your identity and knowing who you are, and it was at a time when my girls were in middle school and high school, and I was just trying to find something to give me a tool to teach them that they matter, is really what it was. And it was a podcast that I listened to, and he was talking about coins, and how do we know their value? And how do we know where we can spend them? And ultimately what he said was, we know a coin's value by whose image is on the coin. And then the message was, we know our value by whose image is on our heart. And it just got me to thinking about all of the things that God has created. And specifically, I started thinking about the stars and how each one, he put each star in its place. And then I just started writing this story about Twinkle, the littlest star, and her journey across the night sky, and she doesn't fit in. And that's how the story came to be. So really, the process of that was, I was inspired, and I wrote the story, and now it's almost 4 years later, and it's literally been hundreds of edits and submissions, and even like rejection with different editors and publishing companies and all of that. But here it is today. So it's been a long process and a lot of people on the team, but this particular story, it was kind of I heard something and sat down and wrote it. And I'm going to say that doesn't happen very often, but
everybody's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to teach writing at Montana State University. Our listeners are like, we know, but I was a writing teacher, and we used lots of textbooks, and I changed it up quite a bit, but I also would bring in readings from Stephen King's book on writing, and he really gets into the space and how that's important for him. It's always this, or he reads in a blue chair, he writes at his desk, he ruminates in the basement, and he talks about these different spaces.
Yes.
And so I wondered if you have like a space that you've cultivated for your creativity.
You know, mostly I would say it's just space and time by myself. So that can be in my office. It can be at a coffee shop. It can be at my kitchen table. Typically it is surrounded by a moment in time that I'm inspired by my girls.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then this book, we should tell people, it's called Twinkle, the Littlest Star. And is it available right now? You're releasing today.
Today is launch day, which basically just means in writing world that it's available for people to read. People are going to be reading these words. It's available on anywhere you buy books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. If you are in Casper or in Wyoming, Wind City Books has it.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, shop local for sure.
Okay. Are you going to have it at the cottage?
And it's at the cottage, yes.
Oh, yes. Very cool.
Yeah, we're having a launch party actually tonight, and Casper is invited. Anybody's invited to come and just celebrate. It's a interactive storybook walkthrough. So I'm hoping for just some time to reflect and kind of get ready for the season. You know, we're getting into that season.
Mm-hmm. What is it like, since this isn't your first rodeo, but what is it like when you see your book in a window?
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. I mean, just knowing, I mean, this has been a 4-year process from the time I sat down to write it and to actually hold the book in my hands with Martin Pawlowski's illustrations and his take and interpretation of the story. It is so amazing. And my hope is that people will love this story and that they'll get that message that you were created on purpose. I'm hoping that parents and their kids, grandparents and their kids can read this story and just cuddle together. It's just an exciting time for sure.
Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. As you were talking about your editing process too, I was thinking about how much I love revision. I mean, it's a great metaphor for life in general. We don't have to just submit a first draft. You keep revising until it's ready. Was there an earlier version of this that looked very different?
Oh, yes.
Did you make some major tweaks that you want to talk about?
Yes. The first version was, it was lovely, but it was just that. It was a rough draft. And I write in verse, which a lot of publishers and editors will say, please don't write in verse, because it is a very delicate and precise way of writing. So I entered a program where I had a mentor, and she on her when I applied for it, she requested that anybody that applied, please don't submit anything in verse. Well, I did, because that's what I had. And so the very first day we met, she was able to help me with the very first line. And then after that, every other line had to meet that exact meter. Well, you don't want to fit words in to fit the meter. You want to fit the meter to make the story wonderful. So it has taken a lot of looking in the thesaurus for different words that mean the same thing. And it's a book about the night sky. So what words mean something in the night sky? And it is a children's book, so the word count's 400. And I have friends that write tens of thousands of words in a book, and this one has 400. So each word has to be precise. It has to have a place in that story. So it was a lot. I think the original story was probably, maybe 600 words. And so we've gotten it down to 400. And yeah.
Well, I like that you pushed back and you did it the way you wanted to, because I do think the lyrical quality of a children's book is important too. That's why we like Dr. Seuss so much. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a lullaby too at the end of the night. Having that, the way that it sounds, is just as important as what's being said sometimes.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and I do think that this book is kind of the lullaby Twinkle Twinkle Little Star meets the all-time favorite Christmas story in Matthew 2, 9, and 10 in the Bible. So it really does have that, I'm hoping it has that lullaby nursery rhyme connection.
Oh, okay. I'm reading T.S. every morning. I'm trying to read a little bit of poetry after I'm doing my meditations and things in the morning, which has actually been really nice. So I'll hopefully keep that up. But I've been doing a collection of T.S. Eliot poetry, and a lot of his rhymes. And this is in the late 20s and 30s I'm in, and then it'll progress into the 60s. It's a big old tome, but you don't see it as often. Serious poems or meaningful poems that rhyme, it's a lot of like funny things, or Shel Silverstein, which I love him. Uh-huh. But it's fascascinating to see the creativity there and word choice.
Yes.
So I get the picture
each
of the thesaurus.
Matters, yeah. And I think there is so much talent in even the short verses. Man, there's power in those words.
So, like you said, Wind City Books, Amazon. You can get it on, where else?
Barnes & Noble. My website is lesliecolburn.com.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's Leslie?
Yep.
Colburn, Colburn.
It is, yes.
Okay. Very good. And you're already working on your next one.
I am.
Were you kind of working on them both at the same time? Because you get the words down, and then the process has, it's almost like putting it into the oven and letting it bake, letting other people deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were able to come up with this. So can we get a teaser on this? Because it might be 4 years from now.
I know. And that's why I've written this next book, because 4 years, I just, you know, there were more ideas. So actually my mom, her name was Jill. And so my next book will be Jilly Goat, about a goat on the ranch. So yeah.
I love goats.
Yes. And my daughter is working on the illustrations, and I'm super excited about it.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, we have just a little bit of time. I wanted to ask you, what are you doing when you're not writing or in the restaurant?
Oh, gosh. Let's see.
Or the cafe, I should say.
Yeah. Sorry. So we have a dog, a golden retriever. I love to take her on walks around our neighborhood and up on the mountains. I'm still a mom. So my youngest is a senior in high school, so she's in the process of like applying for colleges, so we spend a lot of our time doing that. And then my other daughter is in college, so we go and spend time with her. She is in music theater, so I love watching theater with her. And yeah, I mean, really, this is the bulk of the time, but I do love being outside and just being with my family, really.
I have a very important question. Okay. I think this says a lot about a person. Have you already started decorating for Christmas yet?
It's funny you bring that up, because I would say one of the biggest divides in the world, possibly in our country, but in our home for sure, is whether or not we put up our Christmas tree. And I will say that we've had, there's four of us in our household. It's about a 3-to-1 ratio right now. I'm the one that wants it up. And so it's up. Lights are on, but decorations are not. But I will say that I just heard of a study that says that our happiness is actually comparable or relatable to how long our house is decorated for Christmas. The longer we have our house decorated, the happier we are. And I will say this study was actually done by my friend Kim Mills and me, and there were two people in the study, but it was a study.
Oh, I love that.
Yes, we have a little bit of Christmas decor. What about you?
Well, I used to say the day after Thanksgiving, but it just goes so fast that now I've been convinced about mid-November. So we haven't put it up yet, but when I do start decorating, I go nuts. So we're going to have two Christmas trees this year, because we have tall ceilings upstairs. So I want a really tall, skinny one. Uh-huh. And then that will probably be more elegant. I get a little, like I said, I'm a control freak. So that's my tree.
Well, I think we just did a study then. The more you decorate, the bigger the decorations, the happier you are too.
Okay, yes. And it is a lot of fun. I mean, for this one, we need a ladder. It's going to be a real tree. Uh-huh. But then for the one downstairs, that's kind of our family room and our den. And we've got 1,000 homemade ornament macaroni things, that whatever. And I'm like, okay, you can have that tree.
We have that as well.
Yes. And lights. I noticed my neighbor put up their lights already. And I'm like, ooh, maybe we should do that this year. We didn't get it done last year, so hopefully this year. I like the big, like the 90s bulbs, those big ones.
Yes.
So I have some budget for this, because I did think last year maybe we could have gone a little harder.
Okay. Happiness determined by how big your tree is and how early you decorate. I love it.
And I'm excited. I'm going to bring it back to this book. I'm going to read this book, so I'll get my hands on one. And you said it's perfect for the holiday season.
It is. It is. Like I said, it's the lullaby meets the Christmas story. And Twinkle finds that her purpose is the closer she gets to Jesus, the brighter she shines. It's just a beautiful book. I'm just really hoping that it finds its way into families' homes around the Christmas season.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.